It's Tuesday, September 29th. There won't be any handshake tonight, and both candidates seem fine with that. We start here. For the first time in decades, two presidential candidates get ready to square off for a debate with hardly anyone else in the room.
The hardest thing this year is the fact-checking.
We got someone who's refereed each of these men before. ABC's Martha Raddatz breaks down the strategy for all three people on stage. Just because there's no crowd doesn't mean there's not a huge audience.
So if Biden comes out and has a pretty solid debate performance, you might see him tick up a bit.
So what, if anything, can move the needle? And the worst moment of their lives just happened again.
We left with nothing. I mean, just literally with nothing.
The deadly cycle of wildfires creating deja vu in California. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Nah, we're going to win. I think we're going to win bigger than anyone understands.
President Trump has been running for re-election since the day he was inaugurated. I mean, literally, he filed the paperwork that day. Joe Biden began openly campaigning almost a year and a half ago, but well before that was claiming he would beat Trump. Again, literally.
They asked me, would I like to debate this gentleman? And I said, no. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
And yet, in all that time, the two men have never actually been in the same room together. That changes tonight, as they face off on a debate stage for the first time. So I want to dive straight in this morning for a preview with the only person on the planet who has moderated a general election debate with each man. We got ABC's chief global affairs correspondent Martha Raddatz with us. Hey, Martha.
Hey, great to talk to you.
So these are different from the primary debates, right? In the primaries, a political party goes around to all the different networks. They try to hype up the debates. We'll do like 12 of them. The general election debates are run by the much more staid Commission on Presidential Debates, right? Like this even-keeled nonpartisan group. But like even then, at least there's a crowd watching in most years, Martha. What will be different tonight?
I think you'll have some people watching. You certainly will have the families and a few invited guests, but a very different atmosphere. I think the first thing everybody's going to watch for is when they enter, does Joe Biden have a mask on? Does he then pull it down? Because the commission has already said there won't be masks used. They're obviously a long way apart. There won't be a handshake, although my experience with Donald Trump is there wasn't a handshake in 2016 with Hillary Clinton. So now he has a really good excuse not to do that. So we won't be watching for that moment. Oh, are they shaking hands? They're not shaking hands because of COVID.
And I want to talk about the challenges in moderating something like this in a second. But I want to talk about a more basic challenge first that so many journalists have faced is actually talking to voters, like getting out there in the middle of a pandemic and talking to people who don't pick up their phones for pollsters. You actually managed to do this. You and a small team went on this very big but very health conscious road trip. What were your takeaways from that, and how do they translate to what voters are looking for tonight?
You know, you talked to me about probably being the only person who's moderated a general election debate with Trump and with Joe Biden. I'm pretty sure I'm probably the only journalist so far who's traveled 6,000 miles on the road in a pandemic.
Right.
But I felt it was so important and so important to get out of that D.C. bubble in particular. It's something that I like to do. I did it in 2016 and really wanted to check in with people. I mean, we've got the polls, but to be able to go deeper and talk to people.
Whatever. When you go into that voting booth, what do you think about what makes you want to vote for him?
I think he stands for what I believe is right.
Biden will take us back to like how it was before, how it was normal.
There are, as we do know from the polls, people who have made up their minds.
What he's done for the veterans is awesome. I think he almost walks on water.
Hard to beat a guy who can do that. But there are many who have not yet made up their minds, and they will be watching tonight's debate very, very carefully.
I do not know who I'm going to vote for at this point. I'm undecided.
I think what I took away from them overall, however, is that those who are undecided are really looking at personality versus policy. Mm. Do they like what Donald Trump has done? Do they like his policy? Do they like the issues that he has tackled?
He has a strong stand on abortion. He's pro-Second Amendment. He's good for our economy and our jobs.
Because most of those people, if they decide they like that, they're scooting aside with all the personal things that they don't like about Donald Trump.
It started with his tweets.
They don't like his Twitter. They don't like some of the things he said.
We're not losers. We're not suckers.
They don't like the way he's handled certain things.
If he had taken a more aggressive stance on COVID like he was told to do instead of downplaying the seriousness of it.
But when they go into that voting booth, I really get the sense that it's, I don't know, should I do it because I like what he stands for and ignore that other stuff or just go the other way? I didn't sense a lot of great enthusiasm for Joe Biden.
That was the other thing I wanted to know, Martha. How many voters actually talk about Joe Biden to you, or does it feel like it is just a referendum on Donald Trump?
Your first election for presidential election was 2016. When you were 18, who'd you vote for then?
I voted for Hillary Clinton.
You know, you talk to people and they're like, I'm voting Joe Biden. I'm a Democrat. I'm going to do that. I'm like, are you enthused about voting for Joe Biden?
I actually wouldn't say that. I mean, I think.
And a lot of them just said, no, it's really more a vote against Donald Trump.
I currently don't know like what his platform is going to be, other than, you know, I'm better than Donald Trump.
So he has to even generate that enthusiasm to get out and vote against Donald Trump if he's going to win.
Well, which brings us to tonight. And so I should ask you, you know, since you have expertise on this like nobody else, what is the role of Chris Wallace, the moderator, tonight?
Boy, he has such a tough job tonight. But Chris Wallace is an excellent moderator. He did a terrific job in 2016. I know Chris well enough to know he doesn't want to be the story. Moderators do not want to be the story. I mean, Chris has sort of said he wants to stay out of the way, but you're a traffic cop too.
Is that possible in like the modern age where each side seems like they have their own set of facts? Can you really just like go forgotten?
No, you can't. You can't. And it particularly with Donald Trump, you can't.
And why did it morph into that? No, did you? No, answer the question.
My experience in 2016 with Donald Trump is that he is going to interrupt.
I'd like to move on to an online question.
She just went about 25 seconds over her time.
Could
I
just
respond?
He is
going
to try to play the refs. He is going to go after the moderator. He is going to say, you're being unfair to me, even if you're not.
ISIS. And those three have now lined up because of our weak foreign policy.
Mr. Trump, let me repeat the question. If you were president, what would you do about Syria and the humanitarian crisis in Aleppo?
The hardest thing this year is the fact-checking. What do you do about that? What do you do when you hear something that you're pretty sure isn't correct?
When people in the consulate first saw armed men attacking with guns, there were no protesters.
Because
why did that go on for weeks?
Exactly what we were told. By the intelligence community.
I don't think you go in there and say, wait a minute, that's not true. I think you arm yourself with facts in your questions. We know Donald Trump's record on this, so you can't spend the whole evening trying to correct something you hear. Plus, it's the opponent's job to do that. And I know Biden people have said he's not going to waste his time doing that either.
What questions are you expecting to be asked, or which ones are the candidates themselves even gunning for?
Chris has laid out what topics he's talking about. He's talked about race. He's talked about violence. He's talked about the Supreme Court. I think all the topics that you would expect, he's going to talk about Biden's record and Trump's record, but clearly he has to address the taxes.
This tape is generating intense interest. In just 48 hours, it's become the single most talked about story of the entire 2016 election on Facebook.
And it reminds me of 2016, 48 hours before we did that debate with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
And you have 2 minutes for this.
As I told you, that was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it.
The Access Hollywood tape dropped. So in a way, Chris is scrambling a little bit right now with 48 hours about how he's going to approach that. I think Joe Biden wants to address what he thinks America will look like under a Joe Biden presidency, how things will be different.
Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness.
I think he is going to not spend his time on the defense, but probably go after Donald Trump's record and how Donald Trump has changed this country as aggressively as he can.
How far would you let them go?
Well, let me say a couple of things. First of all, Marco said earlier on that
Trump is genius at changing the subject. I mean, I remember he could go from, you know, talking about the economy to talk about defeating ISIS in a nanosecond.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I got mentioned. Can I respond?
And I'd like you to finish the question, please.
As to North Korea.
As to North Korea.
We have tremendous, has been just sucked out of our country by China.
And I think Joe Biden's going to try and keep him on track or really ignore what he says and just talk about what he wants to talk about.
Will the debates make a difference, do you think?
No.
Did the Republican National Convention speech make a difference?
I didn't even listen to it.
I think talking to some farmers in Kansas, and, you know, we say, oh, the farmers support Trump, or they did, but they really wanted to talk about why they're troubled.
I've never voted for a Democrat at the top of the ticket. I haven't ruled it out this time.
They really wanted to tell me, look, he's been good to farmers, but is it about me or is it about the larger issues in this country? And you got a real sense that that is what's gnawing at people who were Trump supporters before and now may be undecided. And they really look at where the country has gone under Donald Trump. Even if it's better for them, they're thinking about a bigger picture.
Yeah, with all these concerns out there, the first debate, always the one that seems to answer the most questions that so many Americans have. 9 p.m. Eastern tonight, 90 minutes of debate. Martha Raddatz, we'll talk to you later.
Great to talk to you.
So on one hand, super high stakes for Joe Biden tonight. On the other, Joe Biden is not necessarily the one who needs to make up the most ground here.
He's heading into tomorrow with a 10-point lead in national polls of the president.
Now, national polls do not win elections. Winning states, though, does. And overnight, ABC News and The Washington Post released the results from their latest state poll, the battleground of Pennsylvania. And for that, I want to quickly ask for help from our partners at 538. We got the host of the 538 Politics podcast, Galen Druk, is with us. Galen, states like Pennsylvania, they're considered the tipping point states, right? And yet this poll shows a pretty sizable lead for Joe Biden.
Yeah, so this new poll out from ABC News shows Biden leading Trump in Pennsylvania by 9 points. And I should say that that's a pretty good showing compared to the current average that we have of polls in Pennsylvania. The current average is closer to 5 points, but that's still pretty good. Our model forecasts Pennsylvania to be the likeliest tipping point state, which means the state that gives whichever candidate who wins their 270th electoral college vote. Hmm. So basically, in layman's terms, Pennsylvania is the most important state on the map. And so a 5-point lead is decent. A 9-point lead is really good. And that compares to Biden's current national lead, where the average puts him at about 7 points ahead of Trump.
Well, and it makes me wonder then if it's really Donald Trump who has to just rain down threes in the fourth quarter, whereas Joe Biden can almost, you know, play to run out the clock. But I guess then what that leads me to, Galen, is do debates matter? Like you've had enough data. You've been sifting through data for years at this point. Can you have a huge moment in a debate that shapes the course of the race?
That's a great question. So over the past several decades, we see that debates can shift the polls by about 1 or 2 points. Oftentimes, we see that in the first debate, the challenger ends up doing better in the polls afterwards. So in this case, that would be Biden. But a famous example would be 2012 with Mitt Romney improving his performance quite a bit.
Mr. President, you're entitled as a president to your own airplane and to your own house, but not to your own facts. Okay. All right.
Another key factor in how the debates matter is, of course, how they're covered by the press. There was a good political science research paper done in 2004 that essentially talked to an audience that watched the debate between Kerry and Bush in 2004.
Saddam Hussein was a unique threat, and the world is better off without him in power. And my opponent's plans lead me to conclude that Saddam Hussein would still be in power, and the world would be more dangerous.
And people who watched the debate and then saw NBC live coverage afterwards, said that Bush had won the debate.
The world is more dangerous today. The world is more dangerous today because the president didn't make the right judgments.
Whereas the audience members that had watched the debate and then read CNN's online coverage said that Kerry had won the debate. Mm. And so, yes, what happens in the debate matters, but also those sound bites, those clips, what the media focuses on after the fact really helps the public form its view of how the debate actually went.
So the influencer culture is alive and well.
Yes. But, you know, I think the big questions at this point are, you know, will Biden have a steady performance? He's been somewhat uneven in debates in the past.
Steve's just asking, will I go on the attack? I have no idea. I have no idea how he's going to be. He's always different when he comes out because he's on a different medication, I guess.
And Trump has done a fair share of lowering expectations for Biden, basically, you know, questioning his mental acuity.
What do you agree to win the debate?
Just tell the truth.
So if Biden comes out and has a pretty solid debate performance, you might see him tick up a bit amongst voters who were concerned about whether he was, you know, all there. I think with Trump, he has his base. And so he's not going to say anything or make any gaffes that will all of a sudden make the floor fall out on his, you know, 43% support or something like that. Or at least at this point, it's hard for me to imagine. No one watching the debate on Tuesday night is going to be seeing Trump as Trump for the first time.
Right.
He's been a mainstay in our national political discourse for 5 years at this point.
What do you think of Biden?
Well,
do you think he's a socialist? Do you think we'd all have to stay in the basement if he got in?
No, I don't think it's that bad, but I don't trust him, especially because of the stuff that's his son has done.
So I think eyes are going to be more trained on Biden's performance tonight.
So again, I guess we're left with the most to lose or gain tonight, clearly Joe Biden, but he might almost, in his mind, be well served by kind of a boring debate. We'll see if President Trump allows him to have one. Galen Drew from our friends at 538. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Next up on Start Here, how often are you left wondering if your home is still standing? We'll take you to a California town that is burning again after the break. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor. You know the type. Like, I've had this person before that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Wildfires happen. That is just a fact. But the overwhelming fear from scientists in recent years is that for every degree of climate change, you're going to see exponentially more wildfires. Because that extra degree sucks that much more moisture out of grass and forests. It widens areas that are fire-prone. And as temperatures climb, some fear days in the near future when, if you're not directly threatened, you might also just be told to stay inside because the smoke around the state is just too bad.
Over the next 24 hours, you have that new fire that is burning in Napa County, the Glass Fire, which is adding additional smoke into our atmosphere.
Well, now, barely 3 years after we were there covering devastating fires, residents in Santa Rosa, California are once again watching parts of their city go up in smoke. ABC's Kana Whitworth is on the ground. Kana, where are you? What are you seeing?
Yeah, Brad. So we're actually in Santa Rosa. We drove over to Santa Rosa from St. Helena, and it's really windy, narrow roads. In fact, we couldn't even get through on the first road that we tried because there were so many downed trees.
Folks cannot travel any farther than this location. Just to the north, you see a giant plume of smoke just over that ridge.
When you get to Santa Rosa, your heart breaks again because you are reminded exactly of what you just talked about the suffering that this town went through.
It was probably 100-foot flame lengths at times. It was staggering to see that. It's just, this is the new normal.
A substantial number of structures have been damaged, wineries and other structures.
Now you're seeing other parts of this town that survived that fire now being torched, now being burned to the ground.
New evacuation orders just this afternoon. Tens of thousands forced to flee.
We left with nothing. I mean, just literally with nothing. We're so lucky to be alive.
And it's especially scary because, you know, this fire really was a spot fire from the Glass Fire that started over in St. Helena. And that happens because these winds are so heavy and so erratic.
We have active firefights taking place, dozens and dozens of engines and strike teams moving into the area.
The firefighters I spoke with say the humidity is so low here that things are just tinder dry and they're going up so quickly.
How's it going so far?
It's a battle.
I mean, they're doing everything they can to protect these homes and this land. One of them we spoke with has been fighting fires for 52 days straight. It's scary to imagine that this is a year-round threat that people that live in California are dealing with. And as I'm standing here talking to you, the wind has sort of died down around here. So the smoke is settling in and the ash is settling in. It's covering our car. It's covering my phone, everything.
Well, we're sad. We're fine, but we're very concerned about our home, which we've lived in for, 37 years. We're just praying that we get out of this okay.
So what does this do to a place? Because we've heard from families who still don't know whether they've got a house because you evacuate. What happens to a place when you're being evacuated every couple of years, essentially?
Yeah, that's hard. And it's a sad reality for a lot of people here that they've done this before. And you evacuate and you have no idea what's happened to your home because they can't get back in for a while. And firefighters don't really know. They estimate on structure loss, but they don't know. And so you really just sort of sit there and wonder.
This is some of the realities of living in Northern California. And
I spoke with a hospital administrator at the St. Helena Hospital. They have now evacuated twice in a month.
Are you afraid of what you might see when you go back there?
Yeah, a little bit. I have a home on the campus that I rent. I'm not sure that it's still standing, but if it isn't, it's just things.
And he said he knew that some of their physicians had lost their homes, but they didn't know for sure. Until it took about 24 hours before they realized who would be going home and who wouldn't.
That's just such a worrying trend as we approach October. Kana Whitworth there in Santa Rosa, California. Thanks for the time, Kana.
Yeah, thank you, Brad.
And one last thing. Whatever happens tonight, some people have already voted, and other absentee ballots will continue to arrive from all over the world. But Kate Rubin's ballot will travel the farthest, because she will be voting from space.
I think it's really important for everybody to vote, and if we can do it from space, then I believe folks can do it from the ground, too.
Rubens is a NASA astronaut and will be on the International Space Station this October. And I did not know this, but for the last 20 years, there has been a whole process in place for letting astronauts vote remotely. It started in the 1990s, when the first space station began orbiting the Earth. Until then, the longest astronauts went in space was for a couple weeks at a time. Now suddenly, they could be up there for months.
But either man, Bill Clinton or Bob Dole, would be a great result. So, whether I get the vote or not, I guess isn't that important.
And so one state senator in Texas, remember, most astronauts are based in Houston, lobbied hard for a new law that would allow this to happen. His concept has not changed much since 1997. Astronauts get secret credentials, which they use to open up an email containing their ballot. They fill the ballot out and electronically transfer their results back to Earth.
We fill out a form and we vote via absentee ballot, and I plan on doing that in November.
What's interesting here is that Texas is one of only a few states that has not allowed its citizens on the ground to cast an absentee ballot this year without an excuse. Being scared of COVID-19 is not an option by itself. On the other side, some voting rights activists have said electronic ballots like this would truly democratize the process for everyone, but it would be tough to scale up this system. When that ballot does return, a Texas county clerk opens the email and physically copies their selection onto a paper ballot, theoretically making them the only person on Earth to know how that astronaut meant to vote. Well, the astronaut's thinking, I really hope that person filled out the right bubble for me. All right, 9 p.m. Eastern, be there. We will have special coverage on ABC, on abcnews.com, on the ABC News app. Our friends at 538 are going to have an emergency pod out as it ends. We are wall to wall for a huge night. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.